occupational therapist and a certified aging in place specialist. And this is the Home Designs for Life podcast, your resource for aging in place and universal design. For more resources on aging in place, please visit my website, homedesignsforlife.com. There you will find my blog and more valuable information on how you can age in place and create a home for life.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for being with me today. My guest is Jeff Weiss. He is the founder of Age of Majority. He is also the CEO, and I invited him here today because he was recently on a TEDx talk in Hilton Head, North Carolina. Jeff, thank you for being with us today.
Jan, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yes. Jeff, tell us a little bit about Age of Majority.
Sure. I founded this over 6 years ago. And at a high level, we help companies, organizations uncover unmet needs so they can make their products or services more usable, desirable, and marketable to older active adults.
Okay, great. And your TEDx talk was on the power of active agers. I listened to it a few days ago, and I thought it was so engaging, and it was also really funny. So I suggest everyone that is listening to this podcast, watch it. I will place the link in the show notes. But Jeff, tell us a little bit about what was your inspiration for creating this topic around active agers?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I spend most of my time in business helping companies. So I do keynote presentations, and it's all about, I'll talk about a bunch of it today, but how do they kind of better reach and engage older adults? But it's from a business point of view. So the TEDx talk wasn't supposed to be business oriented, it was supposed to be more personal. So I really had to reframe my thinking and think about what was that key message that I wanted to kind of, you know, tell people. A lot of folks in the audience were older and active in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. So I had to really reframe my focus. So, you know, I started thinking about that. And then I know you can't believe this, Janet, but I'm going to turn 60 in a few months. So, you know, there's a lot of internal reflection going on. And I see it, you know, I hang out with people of all ages, and I've got a lot of friends kind of in their 80s or 90s. And I really see a big difference between friends, you know, kind of ones who are older than me. And there's some that are very vibrant, whether they're in their 80s or 90s, and some that are less so. And, you know, I start to talk to them and I hear their stories. And the ones that are still very vibrant and active, like they are proactively, you know, kind of facing head on the challenges that come along with getting older. And when I look at the ones who aren't doing so great, they've got, you know, physical challenges, a lot of mobility issues. Sometimes there's mental things that kick in. It's, you know, I look back at their lives and very different than our lives today and kind of younger generations who are much more active. We understand the importance of physical activity and mental cognitive health, things like that. But if those people weren't active when they're younger and they didn't start getting active, they're older, they're just not nearly as vibrant and as mobile and active. So it got me thinking about things and, you know, talking to people, it's like, well, why am I going to bother? Because at some point, you know, I'm going to get cancer, I'll have a heart attack, I'll get dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever. And it's like, whoa, you might be predisposed to getting something like that. And, you know, it's the luck of the draw, there's genetics involved in that. But there are a lot of things that you can control that you just need to take action, decide what those things are. And a lot of those things too can also help. And whether it's slowing down or you know, decreasing the risk of getting cancer or of getting dementia. So, you know, it got me really thinking about myself and then what are the messages I want to communicate to older people like me?
Okay. I agree with you because working as an occupational therapist, I learned early in my career that the biggest difference between people who were living with quality of life in their later years versus the ones who weren't were people who had maintained a healthy weight most of their life and also exercised. And those were the two biggest factors that determined the quality of life that people had in their later years. Mm-hmm. Now, in your talk, you talk about the U-curve of happiness. Can you explain the concept of the U-curve and how it relates to the experiences of active agers?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is research that I haven't done, but it's been done globally by others. And it's been done several times. And they measure kind of happiness at different ages of people's lives. And it's a U-curve because, you know, the highest points on the curve are when you're really young and as you get older. So when you think about it, you know, when you're young, before you're, you know, 15, 20 years old, you don't have a lot to worry about other than, you know, who am I going to hang out with at school? What am I having for lunch? What am I having for dinner? You know, things like that. So you're pretty happy. You're kind of naive and you're happy. So it's no wonder that your happiness is higher when you're younger. And then as you get older, that happiness starts to dip. So think about it. As you get into your 20s, into your 30s, you know, you start having relationships, you know, better chance you're getting married, you have kids, you've got, you know, work, so you start getting the stresses from work. So, you know, your happiness level starts to decrease because you've just got more demands. And then actually the lowest point of the happiness curve, and I'm sorry for anyone listening to this who's under 50, but the lowest point in the curve, and these are global studies, generally are people when they're 48 or 49 years old, right? Because there's a bunch of things going on in your life, right? There's demands. You often have a job, so there's demands associated with work, all the deadlines, the things you have to get done. There's caregiver stresses. A lot of times, you know, you've got a family, one, two more kids. So you've got to kind of deal with them. They're in high school. They're going into university or college in many cases. There's a lot of stress there. And you're also dealing, a lot of times with whether it's parents or in-laws, older adults who need care. So there's a lot of stress from there. And then there's just comparisons that happen, whether you like it or not, of you, how are you doing versus your friends versus other things in society, what you see. So the lowest point of that curve is kind of when you're at your midlife in your late 40s. But then something kind of magical happens as you kind of get over that and the stresses start to decrease. You know, you move away from kind of social competition, you know, who do you hang out and all that, to more about social connections, right? It's more about kind of the depth of friendships that you have and socialization you have, much more about living in the moment. You care less about what people think than you used to. And, you know, you generally, you don't want to hang out with people that bring you down. So you don't have to anymore. You only, you know, want to be with people who inspire you and you know, kind of stimulate things like that. And then again, living in the moment, there's more freedom to kind of say yes to things you want to do and to say no to things you don't want to do. So, you know, as you kind of get older, all these things happen along with your life experiences, changes to your body, things like that. And people are generally happiest after they get, you know, after they're like 65 years of age. But so that's kind of what the numbers show. But it's tough to see that because society kind of paints such a bleak picture of how depressing it is to get older.
That's very interesting that you mentioned that. But I can totally see how having fewer responsibilities will increase your happiness. And then also not caring so much about what people think about you or what you're doing is certainly going to make you feel more free. Yes. Now, you also have mentioned how older adults, because they have more time, you know, thus that having fewer responsibilities, they have more time to learn new things and acquire new experiences. Tell me some of those examples and how this pursuit enhances their quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a belief we've got these dirty dozen myths of aging, as we call it. And there's one that we refer to as you can't teach an old dog new tricks. So it's this belief that as you get old, you're kind of stuck in your ways, right? And, you know, you don't want to try new products or experiences. You know, you want to keep doing what you're doing. And it's just, you know, kind of life goes on and you're not going to try new things. And yeah, that's true for some people. It's true for some people of all ages. But we know that over half of active agers, you know, want to try new things. They're open to new experiences. So again, it's, you know, it's good for both your body and your mind. It's about being positive and kind of, we'll talk a bit more about mental health coming up, but being positive emotionally, mentally is so important in terms of leading a vibrant and active life. And it's also about kind of, you know, making the most of each day and living in the present. So being able to try new things without being afraid to be judged or to fail, right? So again, it's like, you know, it's a tough thing, but you've just got to try new things and saying yes, even though things might not go as well as you plan, you have to be able to try new things. And, you know, a couple examples that I talk about in my TEDx talk, firstly, is skydiving. And skydiving is something I've always wanted to do. And, you know, when I was really young, I was afraid. I was just afraid to do it because what if I, you know, fall and break my neck or my back or something like that. And then, you know, got married and I had a son. And it's like, oh, no, something happens to Jeff. You know, it's like it's going to be my wife and my son alone without me. And it's like, ah. And then when I turned 55, I'm not sure what happened. My wife and son, I think, said, oh, we can manage without you. At least that was their thought. they got me a skydiving experience that I did, you know, my 55th year, and my son, so thankful. Like, I've always wanted to do it. My son, though, said, I'll do it with you. And he was like 20, 24 or something at the time. And we went up 10,000 feet on the coast of Maine, and we jumped, and it was the biggest rush and thrill of my life. And again, it's something that I wouldn't have done when I was younger. But now I had this freedom to do it. It's something, and it was incredible. And I'd love to do it again. And I talk about this woman, Dorothy Hoffner, who a few months ago recently jumped. She was 104 years old, right? And kind of set the world record. Unfortunately, she died like 2 or 3 weeks later, but she died peacefully in her sleep, which is like, if I'm going to go, if I could kind of go skydiving, have an incredible experience, and then, you know, right after that kind of die peacefully in my sleep, like that would be kind of, you know, perfect. The other thing is pickleball. I don't know if you play pickleball, Janet, but
I don't, but my daughter and her boyfriend do, and they are 23 years old and they love it. And a bunch of their friends also play pickleball.
Yeah. So pickleball started out as this kind of, you know, activity for old people, you know, so, you know, it's grown, you know, it was, you know, a couple million, then 4 million, 10 million. You know, the numbers I've seen, over 30 million, about 35 million people play it now. And it's no wonder it's still being driven by older adults. when I was in Hilton Head, my wife and I played and, you know, went to one of the resorts and they had 24 courts. There were 96 people playing and you had to sign up well in advance because it was so popular. But it's not surprising because it is so inclusive, whether you're, you know, 85, 90 years old or whether you're 10 years old, you can play. For a lot of people, they've never had a racket in their hands in their lives, but it's easy to play, easy to pick up. It's cheap to play. You know, you can mark out a court. It's, you know, relatively, you can play almost anywhere. And it's very social as well. And you don't have to be a great athlete at all to do it. And it's an example of one of those things. And it's like, yeah, I see people doing it, look like they're having fun. I'm going to try it. And now you've got this whole group, millions of people. Younger adults like you know you're talking about, but older adults who just, you know, they're playing almost on a daily basis. Now, one of the things that's happening though, interesting and laugh, and it's kind of the day when rollerblading was big. I never got into it,
but I remember rollerblading was big.
And if you remember, the number of people going into the hospital for broken wrists because they'd fall, you know, and they break their fall and they break their wrist. So, you know, I've talked to doctors and like the number of people now who are having, you know, issues, you know, whether it be knees, joints, hips, whatever, because they're playing pickleball has skyrocketed. So it's like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But it's an example of just trying something new that, you know, the people makes them, you know, feel good actively, you know, physically and mentally. A great example of just how it can improve people's quality of life.
Yes. And I'm going to argue that even though they may be going in to the hospital more for knee and joint replacements, you know, because now they're more active, but exercise also reduces your risk for falls.
Absolutely.
So they're stronger and they're less likely to fall. And if they do start falling, it's a better chance that they will be able to recover from their fall.
Absolutely.
So I still think people should be playing pickleball.
Absolutely. I just think, though, it's, you know, I spoke at a conference in Utah in the summer, and it was the Federation of Active Aging. And it's they train and they certify trainers who train older adults. And I said, if it was me doing this, I would set up kind of training that is really more specific to pickleball and then work mm-hmm. with someone who teaches and coaches pickleball and do a joint thing because, you know, oh, yeah, physical activity is amazing. So, but try to reduce the risk of kind of having injuries by doing the right warm up and stretching and exercises so that you can, you know, do it more enjoy versus kind of just going in cold and playing. That's where you're, you know, can really get
right. Well, but yeah, that's great advice. Now let's talk a little bit about misconceptions in marketing. What are some common mistakes and misconceptions you have observed in marketing campaigns targeted at older adults? And how can these be rectified to be more accurately a reflection of their capabilities and interests?
Another good question. I mentioned before, we've got these dirty dozen myths of aging. So I'm not going to go through all 12, but I'll highlight a few things that we see. And we'll start with language. You know, we've got, if you think about, you know, just ageism in total, it's the most, you know, allowed prejudice out there, right? So, you know, and you've got these people, particularly, you know, marketers, people in business who don't know what they don't know. So they have these stereotypes and it's like, you know what, old, you know, people are older. So, you know, they've got all these needs, they've got all these issues. So language is the first thing that I see that often can really be is bad and can be improved on. So it's not inspiring. Just because you're older doesn't mean you don't have hopes and dreams like anyone else. So a lot of times we'll see language that's all, you know, all this negative stuff about, you know, falling and I can't get up and all that. So for me, the first thing is kind of make your language more inspiring so that it appeals to people. So that's the first thing. Secondly, imagery. This is a pet peeve of mine. The imagery out there when it comes to showing older adults kind of being active and using products and is brutal. There's mm-hmm. so much stock photography out there. So if you see a good photo, you'll see it all over the place. And there's one guy, it's my mission to kind of actually meet this guy. And it's on Shutterstock, I think. And you would recognize him because he's an older guy. He's probably 70-ish. I don't know exactly. He's got gray hair and a beard. Very good looking guy. I'm not going to say for his age because that's not appropriate, but a good looking guy. I mean, he's in good shape. And I see him everywhere. And I saw him last week on an ad for caregivers. I saw him. I was watching a show. I can't remember what it was. And it was on a book about older dating. And he was on the cover of it. So he is everywhere. But it's just, you know, the imagery is so bad. So I think we're finally starting to see companies kind of taking their own photography of more authentic, real people. Because a lot of times, and I look at, you know, financial services, insurance and things like that, they show, you know, they show ads and it's like this couple walking, you know, they're either walking, you know, on the beach or in the forest or on a boat. They've got their golden retriever with them. The sun's going up, the sun's going down. And it's like, that's great, but that isn't really representative of a lot of older adults, right? When they're kind of, you know, retiring, looking for that. So there's some great examples now where it's just more authentic and realistic. The third thing is about kind of positioning products. And, you know, you'll totally understand this because as soon as you say, you know, this product is for you because you're old, that's the kiss of death, right? Mm-hmm. It's marketing 101. You should always be marketing your products or services based on the needs of people versus their age, right? It goes for younger generations as well. So, for example, you know, if you've got some products that, you know, make your house easier and more age accessible, then, you know, don't say you need this bar or whatever in your bathtub because you're old. It's like, hey, you know, if you have issues getting in and out of the bathtub, then you know, want something safer. This is it. That happens to appeal more to people who are older, but you're marketing it without saying that. And, you know, my mother, who's 93 now, you know, a few years ago, she fell. She was able to get up, but she did some damage to her back. And I wanted her to wear one of those, you know, life alerts, the personal mm-hmm. emergency response systems. And she shut me down. I think she was 89. She goes, nope, I'm not wearing that no matter what you tell me. And it was like, because for her, the next stage was death, and she didn't want to think about that, right? So, you know, we had a conversation, and I, you know, came to a deal with her, whatever. Now she's in like a retirement center, and it's like, oh yeah, everyone wears these, right? So it's, you know, marketing is the thing. And the other thing I'll just talk about is kind of, you know, the use of technology and how to reach people. And this belief that older adults are not using technology is just crazy. You know, you've got well over 90% of older adults have mobile phones, right? And all you have to do is go out and you see everyone on your phone. You go to your restaurants. It's not just young people who are texting and looking on Instagram. Everyone's doing it, right? And they are searching products online. They're buying products online. We just did a survey yesterday with our community, and you know, but would you purchase an automobile, a car online? And almost 10% have already done so, and you've got almost another 40% who said, "Yeah, I'd be willing to consider that." So I don't think that auto manufacturers think that way. They just think, "Oh yeah, an old person's gonna go into the dealer and buy a car." But you know, there's a lot of things out there, technology, wearables, things like that. And so this belief that older adults aren't using technology is just crazy.
Yes. And going back to imagery, I have learned to use AI to create my own images for my blog posts and for social media, because I was having such a hard time finding adequate pictures of older people on websites like Pexels and Unsplash, where you can either purchase or download stock images for free, because there were so few. That was to begin with. And then even fewer of them, when they did exist, were positive. And so I learned how to use an AI program where I can write prompts and create my own unique images.
Absolutely. Yeah.
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 So tell me, let's talk about health. How important is it for active agers to take time to focus on their physical and their mental health? And what impact does this have on their overall well-being?
That's a huge question. It's such an important question. And in my TEDx talk, I talk about one of the great things about getting older. I've got four different pillars. And one of them is you have the time and ability to focus on your health and wellness, both your physical and your mental. And if, you know, without that, you know, the quality of life just decreases, right? And the goal for everyone should be to have a longer life, but not a life where your health is decreasing and your quality of life is going down. It's something called the morbidity curve. And what you want to do is flatten that out as much as possible, so you're living a longer, healthier life. And then towards the end of life, there's a sharp drop off and you die, kind of like Dorothy Hoffner, what I was talking about. So, so health and wellness is so important, because if you don't have that, you can't do anything. On the, you know, I'm not an expert in the area, but I've talked to a lot of people who talk to their doctors, professionals, who say the best thing you can do for your mental health is do physical health, right? So physical health is so important. And I've always thought and talked about, and I've seen some research on this, the most important thing, we know this is important for older adults based on the research we've done, is sleep. If you do not get a good sleep, then, you know, things start to fall apart there, from your mental abilities, your physical abilities, what you eat, your nutrition, and all that. So sleep is so important. A lot of people struggle with sleep, but fortunately now there's a lot of great things out there that can help people sleep. In terms of physical activity, or your physical health, you know, physical exercise, we know that over 80% of older adults are intentionally being active on on a daily basis. They're more active. Older adults are generally more active than younger adults when it comes to physical activity, because they have the time and they know how important it is. Nutrition, talked about before. You know, I love to eat. I love food. But, you know, being aware of nutrition, being aware of your weight as well, is so important. So yeah, does it mean, you know, I can eat ribs and wings? Yeah, but I can't be eating that stuff every day. So you have to make conscious decisions. And now there's great options for food that's not only healthy and good for you, but it's also delicious, right? And then, you know, watching alcohol intake, cannabis is an interesting one. And I think there's a lot of positives, but there are people that don't. So it's just understanding kind of works for you and what you're comfortable with in terms of physical activity. And in terms of mental health, you know, there's the cognitive piece. So that's about staying sharp. And, you know, it's everything from, you know, doing crosswords, Sudokus, things like that. But a lot of times, excuse me, and I think we'll talk about this, is just, you know, learning new skills, right? And being engaged in society, being curious, being social, being interested and interesting, right? That's so important to your cognitive health. And then there's the emotional and behavioral, which is really like staying positive, right? And a lot of people, if they don't already, should really have, like, I'll call it a relaxation practice, whether that's kind of, you know, there's so many breathing methods, there's yoga, there's things like that. Everyone's got their own thing they can do, but you need that time to really slow things down and, you know, put things in perspective. And, you know, all this stuff, there's so many things you can do proactively that can help your health and wellness, your health and well-being. And it's just that that is so important as you get older, because if you're not doing that stuff, then chances are that, you know, you're not going to be able to flatten that morbidity curve.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your TEDx talk, you also mentioned that active agers are more productive. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on how they contribute to various sectors, such as the workforce or community service, sure, and the value they bring?
Yeah. And again, there's this belief that people are less productive as they get older. And I've never seen research to kind of shows that. So if we talk about the workforce, there's still a lot of people who are working. And this kind of trend towards early retirement is actually reversing. And I think the number is by the year 2030, 150 million jobs globally will shift to people 55 and older, right? So there's this desire to work. Sometimes it's for money. People need the money. But a lot of times it's about just being able to do things that you're good at or trying new things. So from a workforce perspective, you know, a lot of companies, you see ageism, you see it most in technology and in marketing, right? When you're over 40, let alone over 50, you're a dinosaur. But you think about the different skills and abilities that older adults can bring to the workforce, the creativity. Just because you're older doesn't mean you're creative. That's crazy, right? The wisdom, the experience that you can bring can just make organizations, you know, we talk about inclusivity, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. You rarely hear them talk about age, but that's so important if you're running a business to have different, you know, people of different ages, races, ethnicities, right? Otherwise, how are you going to market accordingly to the world? And then entrepreneurs, you know, there's been a lot of research done. The most successful entrepreneurs tend to be older entrepreneurs, right? My son is 27, he's got his own startup, and he's, you know, doing an amazing job. But sometimes I'll have to, you know, have a chat with them based on kind of what I know, what I've learned in my, you know, almost 40 years of working that can apply to him. Next area is, you know, volunteering or broader is giving back to the community, right? And a lot of people, as they get older, it's like they're grateful for what they have and who they are. And now they want to give back to the society or the community. So again, there's this opportunity. There's so many different ways to do that. You know, everything from donating, if you have the money, donating dollars, to getting involved in helping out. We have something in my little village here in Massachusetts called Good Neighbors. And, you know, we've got our whole village where if someone needs help, then, you know, someone is there to help them, whether that's making dinners or driving them someplace. And as you get older, it's like that stuff becomes really, really important. That's so important to society. And then the last area is around caregiving. And there's about 50 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada. And these are caregivers for older adults. And again, they tend to be more mothers and fathers, mother-in-law, father-in-law, or they could be spouses or partners. And so, you know, that is so important when you think about, you know, how you can contribute and being productive. And on average, you know, an average caregiver spends over 25 hours a week in caregiving duties. And it's very, very stressful. At the same time, though, being able to kind of help people, whether it's, you know, older adults, whether it's younger adults as well, the sandwich generation, that is so important to our society and the value that they bring, because the system, our system isn't built. We can't afford enough to help with caregiving. So it comes to individuals to do that.
Yes. I once heard the Dalai Lama say in an interview that the best thing you can do for yourself is to help someone else. That by helping someone else, caring for someone else, that is a positive, selfish way of doing something good for yourself.
Yeah.
Because there's research to prove that our physical health actually improves when we are doing for others.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Jeff, what is your take on helping other people, like myself, a younger generation. I belong to the Generation X. We are the next group that is aging, right? How can we prepare for aging in a better way?
Well, it's interesting. I'm the youngest of the boomers, so I'm 59. So, you know, the youngest of the boomers will turn 60 next year in 2024. So the, you know, Gen X that you're part of, you know, people are 59. So it's like, you know, I'm not a believer at all in kind of marketing to or recognizing people based on generations, because I said Gen X is kind of moving up clearly. But there's all this focus now on Gen Z, which I don't understand, because, you know, it's basically people 25, 26 and under. And, you know, the business world, and there's a love affair for the youth and all this focus on Gen Z, but Gen Z has no money. Anyway, back to your question. The earlier that you kind of start and looking at your future, the better. And again, we've done research with this where I'll give you an example, is with a new nutritional drink that helps people. There's something happens as you basically turn 40, called sarcopenia. I don't know if you've heard that or not, but basically you start to lose muscle mass as soon as you turn 40. So, you know, it's this new you know, beverage out there to help with muscle mass and things like that. And we did research with people 40 and older, and there was definitely appeal and interest of people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. But the highest level of appeal were women in their mid 40s, because women in their mid 40s or younger people are kind of looking at their future now, and they're looking at, they see some people who aren't doing so great as they get older. And then they see these people who are in incredible, you know, vibrant, having vibrant, active lives in their 70s, 80s, and sometimes 90s. So they're making conscious decisions now to do the right things for their body, their mind, their lives, so they can kind of live a happier, healthier, longer life. So, you know, I was thinking about some of the you know, things, habits, for example, that people can do. One of them is kind of having partners, and, you know, things like whether it be physical activity or losing weight. You know, I've wanted to lose, you know, 10 to 12 pounds for a long time. And, you know, my wife wants to lose weight. So starting, you know, kind of beginning of January, you know, we're going to be each other's partners in helping hold us accountable, right, to kind of eating the right things. We're doing like a bone broth diet, right? And then, you know, there's things like I was walking with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and he's part of a men's walking club now, right? So, which is interesting, because I often see women walking, you know, alone or with their dogs in groups, and it's great, right? They're just, it's a social activity, but also a very physical activity. And this is for men, and there's like 35 of them kind of in our local area that meet a couple times a week, and they're walking. So by having a partner or partners to help you kind of hold you so that you're kind of doing the right things, I think is important. Having daily routines is really critical. And I know we've done a lot of interviews with people, and a lot of them have these daily routines, right? And it's like, you know, you get up at X time, have my coffee, I read the news, and I'm out doing exercise, I'm out doing errands, things like that. You know, they're involved with their, you know, the community, with their church, whatever. Having daily routines that kind of help to stick to you, that you stick to those things that you want to do, helps. Tracking your progress is really important, and kind of rewarding yourself for completing tasks and hitting milestones. It's a bit like gamification, right? And now the great thing is there's tech out there to help you do all of this stuff, to track things, right? To hit milestones. And along with that is really setting expectations so that you're not disappointed. And I'll quickly talk about something that's called the gap. This is something I came up with. And it's basically how you look at something. So when I look at my wife and I, let's say we each have a goal of losing 10 pounds, you know, we'll get on the scale. And then, you know, let's say 2-3 weeks later, I get on the scale and I've lost 5 pounds. It's like, yeah, I've lost 5 pounds. Isn't that amazing? I've only got another 5 to go, right? Let's keep going, right? If you're really good about it. My wife, you know, tends to look at it differently. And she gets on that scale and she says, oh, I've only lost 5 pounds, right? Our goal is 10, but she looks, I've done all this work and I've only lost 5 pounds, and it's demotivating, right? So kind of setting expectations, rewarding yourself versus feeling bad about it, you know, is really important, because things just don't happen overnight. And if you've got expectation, I'm going to start to work out and I'm going to feel better in a week. Yeah, it's not going to happen. So kind of, you know, do things and set expectations and targets. And then really, really what's important is remind yourself why you're doing it. And there's some great ads out there now, particularly the holidays, some come out of Europe, particularly this older gentleman. And I got to believe he's in his 80s. and he lives alone, and it's Christmas time, and he's going to be spending Christmas with his family, and he hasn't worked out. He's not in good shape at all. And, you know, he looks at a picture of his granddaughter, and it's like, hmm. And he goes into his shed, and he's got like a kettlebell, and he starts doing, and he can't even he can maybe lift one to start with, right? And he kind of doing, and he finally gives up. And then it kind of, he sees, you know, someone getting a Christmas tree, and it hits him. And all of a sudden, he, you know, kind of sets himself. He's got his daily routines, and he's doing that, the kettlebells, and he's out running and walking and stuff like that. And the reason he does it is the payoff is because at Christmas Day, he drives to his daughter's place, and he's looking great, and he's got a gift for his granddaughter, and the gift is a star to go on top of the Christmas tree. And the granddaughter, and he actually, because he's been doing all this activity with the kettlebells, he's able to lift her up so that she can put the star on the top of the tree. So that was the reason why. So
that's beautiful. You know,
always think about why you're doing it. People aren't losing weight. Some people are losing weight just because, you know, from a health perspective, but a lot of people are losing weight just so they can spend more time with their grandkids, so they can travel more. You can do things that you want to do, skydiving or whatever. Just always keep in mind kind of why you're doing something.
The purpose behind it.
Yes.
Now, my last question is about embracing aging. Mm-hmm. Your talk touches on the idea of stopping the battle against aging and instead embracing it.
Yes.
Can you discuss how this perspective shift can positively impact both individuals and society?
Good question. From a societal point of view, you know, and if you believe what you read in the media, it's like I mentioned before, it's like there's nothing good that happens from an aging society. But the reality is we're getting older, right? By the year 2100, 42% of all the population is going to be 55 and older. Like there's no stopping it. Right now we're about 30%, right? So it's like, oh my God, as people get older, you know, how are we going to pay for all their healthcare costs, right? Who's going to take care of these people? You know, the dependencies about it. And it's just, it's not good, right? So, and a lot of that is just based on either myths, but also this, you know, inertia. So society needs to understand that if we can get older adults to a place where people are healthier, first and foremost, and happier, all these things go away and the reverse starts to happen. So, you know, just because people are older doesn't mean that health costs have to increase, but personally, I think too much effort's being placed on people once they're declining versus helping people get to a better place so that there's less decline, right? So that's right. That's a whole societal
just avoiding thing. The decline.
Exactly. Versus kind of embracing. And it's like, yeah, life doesn't have to be depressing and bad as you get older. Life can be pretty great, but you have to do this. And so I think society really needs to embrace that so that, yeah, healthcare costs are lower, that, you know, you get multi-generational learning, right? There's mentorship, things like that. There's, you know, in terms of, you know, a crisis for a lot of people, you know, older people, younger people, where am I going to live? I can't afford it. There's also a crisis in colleges and universities because they're, you know, you've got this gap coming where enrollment's going to decrease, but you've got these great facilities. So why not open these up as one example for multi-generational living where people younger and older can live together, learn from each other, you know, be social and all that. It's just one example. So I think society, there's, if we keep battling it, it's like a downward spiral, which isn't good. Individually, and I mentioned this in my talk, and I hear this all the time, there's a lot of self-denial going on. It's like, you know, I'm going to be fine. You know, I'm just as fit as I was when I was 20 or 30. And, you know, the reality is things are going to happen to us as we get older, whether we like it or not. So it's just, you know, forget denying that. So be prepared for that, right? And so there's a lot of self-denial going on. There's also a lot of, I'll call it like self-deprecation going on. It's like, you know, oh, I forgot something. So automatically it's a senior moment. You know, if that's the case, I've had senior moments my whole life. So again, there's all this language and we process this internally and it's, you know, we just are living the stereotypes and that can really, really bring you down. And so that, you know, the thing that I think is most important, and I talk about this, we've done research, is something I call getting over your FOGO. And FOGO is fear of getting older, right? And, you know, there's a fear of dying, yes, but a lot of people are afraid of getting older because they're looking at these stereotypes, hearing stories all the time. Oh, this person, you know, has cancer, has died. This person has dementia. You hear that all the time, right? but it's still a small portion of the population. So you have to get over this fear because that can really paralyze you and can lead to inactivity. So as soon as you get over this fear of getting older, it's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm getting older. Everyone's getting older. At some point, I'm going to die. But does that mean that I can't live this incredible, happy, healthy life? Absolutely not. So for me, the number one thing is getting over your FOGO.
I think that's great advice. And like you said, the most important thing is just stop denying that we're all getting older, and then also plan for it so that we can remove these hazards that will actually decrease our quality of life, falls being the number one thing that affects older adults.
So, yes, I
think that's great advice. Yeah. Jeff, this was so much fun. I loved watching your TEDx talk. I love talking to you today. And I hope that you'll do another one. Do you plan to do more of these talks in different settings?
Yes, definitely. I don't know so much TEDx talks, but my goal moving forward is to kind of do more talks to individuals, whether they're in kind of, you know, community centers or in senior living communities, places like that, because my goal and kind of my purpose is to kind of, you know, being engaging so that I can inspire people to kind of live these active lifestyles. And, you know, doing the TEDx talk was kind of very, you know, it was kind of validating for me that I see a lot of people who it's like, you know, older and active, and they just, you know, all this negative stuff that they see. And it's like, you're right. You know what? Getting older doesn't have to be a bad thing. We are living our best lives right now. And there's no reason why we can't kind of continue to do that and be happier and healthier for a longer period of time. So I'm hoping to do a lot more of them. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeff. And I will have all of Jeff's information in the show notes, along with a link to his TEDx talk.
Thanks, Janet. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.